Random House Audiobooks presents Reversible Errors by Scott Turow. Read by David Burney. Reversible Error. Noun. A legal mistake made by a trial court which is so significant that an appellate court reviewing the case must set aside the trial court's judgment. The trial court is then instructed either to dismiss the case, to retry the case, or to otherwise modify its decision. April 20th, 2001. The client, like most clients, said he was innocent. He was scheduled to die in 33 days. Arthur Raven, his lawyer, was determined not to worry. After all, Arthur reasoned, he was not even a volunteer. Instead, he'd been drafted by the Federal Appellate Court to ensure that after 10 years of litigation, no sound arguments remained to save Rami Gandalf's life. Worrying was not part of the job. He was worried anyway. "I'm sorry?" asked Pamela Towns, his young associate, from the passenger seat. A gurgle of anguish had escaped Arthur as he had come once again face to face with himself. "Nothing," said Arthur. "Then I just hate being the designated loser."
"Then we shouldn't lose." Pamela, with rosy good looks fit for TV news, flashed a bright coast-to-coast grin.
They were far from the city now, doing 80 on cruise control in Arthur's new German sedan. They'd left Center City at 7 to beat the traffic. Arthur hoped to hold a brief introductory meeting with their new client, Rami Gandalf, at the state penitentiary at Rudyard, and to be back at his desk by 2 o'clock, or 3, if he decided to risk asking Pamela to lunch. He remained intensely conscious of the young woman nearby, of the tawny hair falling softly on her shoulders, and of the hand that crept to her thigh every several miles to retract the hiking of her tartan skirt. Eager as he was to please her, Arthur could offer little hope for the case. "At this stage," he said, "under the law, the only thing that could possibly amount to reversible error would be new evidence of actual innocence, and we're not going to find that."
"How do you know?" asked Pamela.
"Because the man confessed to everybody but the Daily Planet. 10 years ago, Gandalf had copped to the police, then gave a handwritten statement to the prosecutor, Muriel Wynne, and finally repeated his admissions on videotape. On each occasion, he had acknowledged he was the person who'd shot 2 men and a woman and left them in a restaurant food locker, in a case still referred to, in the tempered words of the press, as the 4th of July massacre."
"Well, he kept saying on the phone he's innocent," said Pamela. It's possible, isn't it?"
For Arthur, who had been a deputy prosecuting attorney before coming to work 7 years ago at O'Grady, Steinberg, Marconi, and Organ, there was no possibility of that at all. But Pamela, at 25 or 26, had just started practice. Saving an innocent client was a sort of adventure she'd imagined in law school, riding like Joan of Arc toward radiant justice. Instead, she'd settled for a big law firm and $120,000 a year. But why not have everything? Well, you couldn't blame people for their fantasies. God knows Arthur Raven realized that.
"Listen to what I found in Rami's probation records," said Pamela. "On July 5th, 1991, he was sentenced to time served for a violation of probation. The murders were early on July 4th, so time served would mean he was in jail, wouldn't it?"
"It would mean he was in jail at some point, not necessarily on July 4th. Does his rap sheet show he was in jail on July 4th?
"No, but it's something to investigate, isn't it?"
It would have been something to investigate a decade ago, when the records to prove it was nonsense still existed. Yet even at that, the Federal Appeals Court was likely to grant Gandalf a brief stay of execution, during which Arthur and Pamela would be obliged to scramble in dogged and futile pursuit of this phantom theory. Rankled by the prospect of more wasted time, Arthur nudged the cruise control wand a bit higher and felt some dim satisfaction in the big auto's response. He had purchased the car 2 months ago as a trophy of sorts, after he became a full partner in his law firm. It was one of the few luxuries he'd ever permitted himself. But he'd barely turned the key when he began to feel he was disrespecting the memory of his father, who had recently passed, a loving man, but one whose eccentricities had included a cramped frugality.